I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hello there. Welcome into Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast presented by Superbook Sports. JJ Jerez here. Arif Dean checking in from Toronto. I can see the skyline of downtown Toronto right behind you in your hotel window, Arif. And you know, after a game like that, 2-1 overtime win in Toronto, we have to come and break it down a little bit for you. So Arif from Toronto, how you doing? How was the experience? And yeah, tell us a little bit about your night.
Experience was good. The night was good. The game was just a defensive battle, but it was fun. The arena didn't have the kind of energy you hope out of a game between Colorado and Toronto, but the actual on-ice product was a lot of fun. Toronto's been great. I am going straight from here to Detroit. Like we talked about the other day, the Avalanche are on their way to Ottawa. They're probably landing there right now. It's 11 p.m. Eastern time. They play there Thursday, and then they'll meet me in Detroit for that game Saturday, but tonight was a fun one. It was a grinded out type of victory, and it was exactly the type of game that you want to play when you come on the road and play one of the most skilled teams in the NHL.
Yeah, let's get into that defensive aspect that you just brought up. I mean, tonight was very much about Georgiev, in my opinion. You know, he made some big saves there down the stretch of the game and then, of course, stole the show in the shootout. But it was very much a defensive style game from both sides here, right? Last podcast, you and I talked about how games are starting to pick up their intensity. They're starting to feel a little bit more playoff-esque and, you know, not exactly from a physical standpoint, but from that defensive shut it down, not really allow too many dangerous chances. Both sides really brought, I think, an A game from the defensive side.
100%. I mean, the Avalanche, the way that they've been playing defensively these last three games has been just textbook is the best way to explain it. The Toronto Maple Leafs also had their fair share of defensive abilities, you know, tonight playing the game that they played, but you want to look at it from Colorado's standpoint. Like, what Toronto did was impressive, but couldn't get that last goal, the one in overtime or the one in the shootout to win it. What Colorado did was even more impressive because it's the second game of a road trip. You're coming to Toronto, where last year when you came here you got whipped by the Maple Leafs, 8 goals on Jonas Johansson, obviously, not Georgiev or Kemper.
Asterisk.
Yes, big asterisk. You're playing a very strong team in the Toronto Maple Leafs who's coming off of a loss to the Buffalo Sabres, so they're hungry. They're one of the deepest teams in the NHL. They've got a lot of talent, and you came into their barn, and yes, they held you to just 24 shots in regulation, or 25 shots in regulation and 29 overall, but you held them to 18. You did an exceptional job. You surrendered the first goal and didn't let the game get away from you after that Morgan Riley goal. And it was textbook defensive hockey on the second game of a road trip, where in the first game, you lost one of your best defensive forwards in Arturi Lehkonen, and the type of guy that, you know, when you play these types of games, he's usually the one you are recognizing and noticing. So without him against Toronto, 18 shots, it's an incredible game from the Avs.
Yeah. I don't know. You want to jump into an Arturi Lehkonen conversation real quick, and then we'll keep this defensive train rolling.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go to Arturi.
Okay. Yeah. So obviously left the game in Montreal after, scoring a goal, getting a standing ovation. Breaks a finger. So,
yep.
Obviously detrimental. Do you think he makes it back in time, healthy, ready to go in playoffs? It reminds me a lot of the Nazem Kadri injury almost from last year, right? I mean, it was a top hand right? Was Nas his top hand or was his bottom hand?
I think Nas was a bottom hand. I'm trying to remember which one is more important, because that's what it was for Nas. And Nas was also a thumb, so a thumb injury is a little bit more, it's a little bit tougher to recover from. But the best way to explain what Lehkonen has is not to compare it to Nazem Kadri, it's to compare it to the guy in Toronto that's also not playing tonight, Ryan O'Reilly. Ryan O'Reilly broke his finger, I want to say about a week and a half ago now, maybe 2 weeks, if I remember correctly. And Toronto said, I think, right around a 4 or 5 week timeline. So Jared Bednar has been throwing out the number 4 to 6 weeks. He hasn't been saying that that's Lehkonen's timeline. He's been saying that that's what it usually takes to get back from this type of an injury. So Lehkonen, if I understand it correctly, he flew with the team on Monday from Montreal to Toronto. And then in Toronto on Tuesday, he flew out to Denver. Galchenyuk flew in to replace him, obviously, and was expected to get surgery. So Lehkonen may have had the procedure done today, may have had the procedure done, you know, today, as in Wednesday is when we're recording this, maybe Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon, or he may have the procedure scheduled for sometime on Thursday, where we'll get a more clear timeline. The regular season, I believe, ends in a month from today, 30 days. So that gives him ample opportunity to return a lineup, to return to the lineup for the playoffs right around the 4.5 to 5 week mark. Maybe miss a game one, but I would suspect that he's going to be, and you know, the good thing about a broken finger is he can still train, he could still skate. There's a lot of things he can do. He can remain up to speed. It seems like the type of thing where he's going to be ready to rock and roll game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I don't think he'll play another regular season game just because of the fact that the Avalanche end with a back-to-back. Had it been, you know, that Nashville game didn't exist, the one that was rescheduled where they had a day off, maybe he jumps in for game 82, but it wouldn't make a lot of sense to play at Ball Arena, throw Lehkonen on a plane, fly to Nashville and play him there. So I think he'll be ready to go for the playoffs. If anything, maybe he misses like one game.
Right. Hopefully closer to 4 weeks than six. Yeah, it's kind of that time, right? No need to rush him. A lot like they did last year heading into the playoffs. Even if a guy was a little bit injured, really kind of give them that extra time to just get ready for the playoffs, because you know they're in it. So obviously a guy they're going to miss, but once playoff time comes, he's going to turn back into playoff Lehkonen, and we know that's a better version than he's been playing already this season. He's been playing great this season. So excited to see what he brings to the table for playoff time.
Yeah, absolutely. 20 goals, 29 assists, 49 points in, I believe, 62 games. All career highs for him. Did you happen to catch how he broke his finger, which has not been confirmed, but it looks like he broke his finger in that Montreal game?
I didn't catch it. No.
It was the second goal that he scored, the power play goal. He had his stick up and he was in front of the net and the puck deflected off of his glove and went in. And that looks like the play that may have broken his finger, the goal. Ooh. The 20th goal of the season, because if you remember the first goal that the Avalanche scored, it was originally given to Logan O'Connor and then it was later changed to Arturi Lehkonen. So nobody really knew that he had that goal. When he scored the goal, the one that allegedly or potentially broke his finger, like you said, the crowd cheered for him. Now, the reason why the crowd cheered for him was really cool. If you remember, Arturi Lehkonen, before he was scoring big goals for the Avalanche, sending him to the Stanley Cup final and then eventually winning the Stanley Cup with a goal, he scored the game-winning goal in overtime against the Vegas Golden Knights to lift them out of the I don't even want to call it the Western Conference final, out of the conference finals into the Stanley Cup final. But he played that entire series and scored big goals without a crowd at Bell Center. And then I don't think he scored in the Stanley Cup final against Tampa Bay. So they never got to cheer for his goal. It was as if they were making up for that lost time to be like, hey, let's cheer for this guy. We're not going anywhere, whatever. Let's just root for him. So they were kind of remembering that. So it was a really cool moment. 20th goal of the season. First time he's done that. 100th goal of his career in Montreal. And the away team fans, well, the home team fans when he's on the road cheering for him. And it all is on a goal that potentially broke his finger and ends his regular season. Just a very strange turn of events for Arturi. But I'm not too concerned about this one, especially given the way the Avalanche played today. I'm not too concerned about this one. I think this injury is going to be, you know, not A-OK, but is not the worst thing in the world.
It's frustrating for a player to injure something like that where the rest of your body feels game ready. But also, you know, it could be a little period for some much needed rest for him, right? And I bet you, you know, with that he'll come playoff time in tip-top shape because he's going to be able to skate. He's going to be able to continue to be on the ice, getting in, you know, continuing his in-game shape and even letting a few things heal along with that finger. So I expect a better version of Arturi Lehkonen than even he left off, which was a pretty solid version, like I said. But back to the defensive conversation, I think shot suppression has really been their strength, right? And if you look back to last year and even years of past, I feel like that's been what this defensive group tends to do. I think they maybe got away from it a little bit early this season, but it feels like the defensive unit is playing the way they're designed to play. And I don't know if that's just simply with the addition of Bowen Byram and him getting comfortable getting back into the swing of things. But I love the way, I mean, we all love the way the defensive group is looking right now.
No, absolutely. They look great. And, you know, there's something to be said about how much better this defense will get when they're healthy. And you know what? I'm not even going to do the thing like Mikko Rantanen said today when he was asked just real quick about the injuries and losing Lehkonen and recovering from that. He said, we're used to it. Like, this is just what we do. We lose guys, we play, we win games. 18-5-3 in their last handful of 20-something games.
As long as they don't lose him.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, thank you. 18-5-3 since the sky was falling in game number 40 in that regulation loss to the Chicago Blackhawks. So the Avalanche are looking pretty dang good right now. But
who? Hold on. The Blackhawks just beat the Boston Bruins last night, mind you.
The Boston Bruins just don't care anymore. They lost to the Red Wings and then the Blackhawks. They're like, is it playoff time yet?
Yeah.
But yeah, like back then, it still mattered a little bit more for teams like that. And the Avalanche, you know, that was a tough game back then. That was also the last game Darren Helm played because he came in for five games and the sky was falling. Then they came out, defeated the Ottawa Senators 7-0, 18-5-3 since. So the way Mikko put it was like, we're used to it. This is just what we do. And so when you're talking about the defense, what I was going to say was, when I say when they're healthy, I'm not even going to be greedy and say when all six of their top six guys are healthy. I'm just talking about their horses. They're Taves, they're Makar, they're Byram, they're Manson, they're Girard. We've talked about this many, many times. They have five guys that can play in a top four role, and then they have a clear-cut number six in Erik Johnsson. I don't care if the number six guy is Erik Johnsson. I don't care if it's Jack Johnsson. I don't even care if it's Brad Hunt, who, by the way, love that dude. He's such a fun guy, aside from him being a player. If the Avalanche have their top five guys healthy, they're going to look way better than they already do. And I don't think we talk enough about what Josh Manson means to this team. You and I do, and we do it often, but I want to use the Toronto Maple Leafs as an example. And I'm going to do this because it's time we start to learn a little bit about them, because there is a chance they are in the Stanley Cup final this year, whether it's against the Avalanche or not. This team is good. They're locked and loaded and ready to go for a long run. The Maple Leafs early in the season lost Jake Muzzin to a back injury. And it was one of those unfortunate injuries where it just kind of seems like his career might be over. And he was the only guy on that team that does what he does, that plays the type of game that he plays. So at the trade deadline, they had to address it, and they did. They brought in Jake McCabe, another Jake, from the Chicago Blackhawks to play that type of role. Jake McCabe is the only guy on the Maple Leafs that plays that physical edge top four type of role, sound defensively, can pitch in offensively, but is that physical force on the blue line that you can rely on to play big minutes. Josh Manson is that to the Avalanche. When you're missing a Bo Byram, it's not easy, but Sam Girard, Devon Taves, and Cale Makar can pull the weight and make up for it. When you're missing a Cale Makar, the other three can pull. Devon Taves, the other three. Girard, the other three. When you're missing Josh Manson, nobody can do what he does. That's why the Avs went out and traded for Jack Johnsson, because they could rely on him at least more than they could on Andreas Englund, but he still can't play the type of minutes consistently and be effective in the way Josh Manson is. So if or when, well, I shouldn't even say if, when Josh Manson is healthy, and if the Avalanche have all five of these guys healthy, as in nobody else gets hurt by the time Josh is back, their defense is only going to get better. And I think, like I said last episode, this is their bread and butter now. Playing this type of defensive style game is what's going to lead to them winning playoff games this season as compared to last year. And what they're doing defensively right now without Josh Manson, incredible. Again, especially given the fact that you're playing somebody like Toronto who has the power that they do.
Yep, Avalanche are 6-1 in Josh Manson's last seven games. So obviously a great piece to put in the lineup. But the Avalanche have been playing so well. Obviously, you miss Josh Manson, but during games, honestly, I haven't really been thinking about him. I've never been like, oh man, they really miss Josh Manson in this scenario. So adding a piece like Josh Manson to a defense that's already playing the way they are, I mean, you're just it's gravy on top of the mashed potatoes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just can't wait to see it. We've said it before. We'll say it again. November 4th was the last time all five of those D-men played in the same game at the same time in Finland. And they creamed the Columbus Blue Jackets that night. So, or that day, whatever, in Finland. So having him back is going to be huge, because the difference now compared to in October is Sam Girard has found his game. Devon Taves had an inconsistent start to the season. He's playing well. Cale Makar is playing at the top of his game. Bo Byram's playing at the top of his game. Everybody looks great from the top four right now. If you add Josh Manson to that mix and he plays the type of game he did, if you remember his last return, the game against Minnesota, how effective he was in that game and how noticeable he was. If he comes back and plays that type of game while the other four guys are all playing how they're playing, it's game over for the opposition. Like the Avalanche, they're built on defense this year. They have since the beginning. They are not a middle of the pack, but they're closer to a middle of the pack team offensively, but defensively, save percentage wise, things like that. Now shot suppression these last 3, 4, 5 games. If you include the LA and San Jose games, they've surrendered 101 shots over 5 games. That's 20 shots per game. It's pretty damn good. So they're looking really well on that front. And when they have Manson back, it's, assuming everybody else is healthy, it's game over.
I really feel like Bowen Byram, he makes his impact felt for sure, but he still needs to clean up some things here and there. So once he's, full swing and getting into playoff mode, he's going to have a whole nother level to him too. But, yep. he just throws a different element into the game, just the way he plays, his aggressive style. And, he just is something for the opponent to watch always.
Yeah. And right now you have Bowen Byram playing with Sam Girard. When you have Bo playing with Josh, a player that's more capable of covering for him, not that Girard isn't a good two-way defenseman, he does have good defensive abilities too, but Girard also likes to jump up in the play. So does Josh, but not to that level. So once he's playing with Manson, it'll help him even more.
All right, I guess here's a good little halftime we'll take here to talk about our buddies over at Superbook Sports. Of course, 2023 is the year that we can all make the year we make it the year we beat Vegas in the Superbook. Superbook Sports gives you the chance every week to go head to head with the best odds makers in Las Vegas. No fancy computers, algorithms, no guys across the pond setting lines for American sports, just the best team of odds makers in the business behind the counter at the Superbook in Las Vegas. Plus, Superbook features some of the best odds boosts and promo bets anywhere. So download the Superbook Sports app now or visit superbook.com and start your battle against Vegas right now. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Arif, let's get to Alexander Georgiev. Gets his 30th win of the season. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, really kind of grabbed the reins during the shootout and said, I got this, boys. Just score one for me, and we'll be on our way to Ottawa with a victory. So a couple big saves, not the most spectacular night, but that made the saves necessary, and a couple big ones in the second and third period that really kept Toronto at bay.
Toronto had 11 shots in the second and third period. One of them was a 2-on-1 where Mitch Marner set up Kaliar and Kroc. You guys all remember that save. And he was incredible and spectacular on that save. Then there was another play off the rush where William Nylander went to his backhand wide open, shot it, and he made a pad kick save. 11 shots in two periods, and he was sharp enough to make two stops like that, and I'm probably missing some other ones. He was incredible. And when I asked him today about, how it is to stay sharp in games like that, I mean, look, this is the same guy that faced 19 shots in Montreal and 4 went past him because he was just kind of sitting there hanging around. The Avalanche are making it 5-0, 6-1, and 4-0, 4-1, 5-1, 6-1, 7-2, and then two of them just get by him. It's hard to stay sharp in games like that, but tonight was different. He was able to keep his composure and really be ready for any opportunity. And he kind of mentioned that it is a little bit different because of that when I asked him about it post game, which, by the way, you guys will listen to it after this. I'll throw in a clip of Alexander Georgiev after the game and after the victory. And he kind of mentioned how it is a little bit different, but all you have to do is just kind of stay composed, stay in your game and really just kind of like the usual, just be ready for anything that comes at you. And he was, and he did a good job at it. So
sorry to interrupt you, but there's a big difference between, you know, when you're not seeing shots and when you're not seeing the puck down in your zone. And Toronto still was able to get the puck down in your zone. Alexander Georgiev can get set. He can follow the puck across the crease and follow it around the zone. Even if no shot actually gets to the net, you know, he might even face a shot attempt. Well, it might not reach him. He's still getting action, right? He's still staying in the game. So I think against a team like Toronto where, you may not be seeing that many shots, but you're still seeing action. It's a lot different than, say, you know, San Jose, for example.
Yeah. You ever seen that picture? I forget which goalie it is where they're sitting on top of their net and they're just kind of like hanging out, sitting on top, and their pads are just kind of, their legs are just hanging out the front of the net. I forget which goalie it was. It's a famous picture. Maybe it was Tim Thomas. I don't remember. Or actually, it was Marc-Andre Fleury, I'm pretty sure. So that picture is what it was like to play the San Jose Sharks. You're just kind of hanging out, just chilling. The puck's in the other zone. You're not really engaged. You're not doing much with it. That's what it looked like for most of the Montreal game before the Avalanche took their foot off the pedal, understandably so, up by 4, 5, 6 goals. But against Toronto, like you said, it was different. Just because the shots weren't coming at him, it doesn't mean he wasn't engaged. Every time Toronto's got a rush, he's locked in. He's getting in that butterfly position. He's tracking pucks, he's trying to see where things are, and then his team makes an incredible defensive play, goes the other way, gets a second arrest, recharge, reset, here comes Toronto again, time to get back in. So it was a little bit different from that point of view. So he was locked in and engaged the entire way, I would say. I mean, in overtime, did you see how many opportunities Toronto had to score in overtime and how it looked like they had a couple good chances?
Mm-hmm.
You wonder how many shots Toronto had in overtime?
How many?
Zero. Bingo. So that's just the, I mean, one of them hit the crossbar, obviously, or the post or whatever, but that's just an example. No matter how many times Toronto had opportunities in the offensive zone in overtime, he didn't really face a shot, but it doesn't mean he wasn't engaged and locked in. He was ready to go and he was in the game. So a little bit of a different feel for him, but the Avalanche are doing that good job of when the puck gets down to their end, they're making sure that the other team, they're locking in on the other team. They're doing Jared Bednar's favorite thing, their commitment to checking, as he says, over and over and over again. They're doing a great job at that. And when the other team does get a shot, Georgiev is tracking pucks really well. Like Morgan Riley, if you remember early in the game, Riley had a shot, it hit the crossbar. Then he came back from that circle. He had the exact same shot and scored. After that, every shot was a good, Georgiev had a good look at every shot, even in the shootout. You know, he made the very confident poke check on Mitch Marner where he was with him the entire way and then just poked it. It looked easy. Auston Matthews, same thing. One of the best shots in the NHL. Came in and just ran out of real estate because he was right there and held him. Same with William Nylander. He was so confident in tracking pucks where he never looked out of position.
That Nylander save was the one that did it for me. I loved it. The way he followed that across and didn't let himself flop onto his side, just kept shuffling his knees and stayed up and just put his glove right where he needed to. But the save that really stood out to me was during a power play, I think in the second period. The puck was in the corner, gets passed across, and Georgiev follows it immediately. I don't even think he knew the shooter was there, but he followed the puck, tracked it right across, and a beautiful pad save made it look elementary. And it's a way tougher save than he made it look. And that's where I want to go with this is the penalty kill, right? On nights where the Avalanche are having a really strong penalty kill, Alexander Georgiev has been one of the best penalty killers. I mean, he when he brings it, he shuts that penalty kill down. So I think that's going to be a huge asset moving forward, just the way he can shut down a penalty kill and the confidence he has and just that extra little weapon that you have on top of an already pretty effective penalty kill unit.
Yeah, I mean, there was against the Montreal Canadiens, I believe it was Evgeny Dadonov that scored on the power play. That ended a stretch of 17 straight kills for the Avs on the PK. And then they killed off 3 more today. So with him back there and with them playing the way they are on the PK and now finally starting to score some power play goals, they only had one today and it was kind of a gift, but one is more than necessary to win a game. That's 20% on 5 opportunities that they had. So with the PK playing the way they are and with the power play starting to get a little bit of a charge here, that's huge for the Avs because now both your special teams are kicking it and your goalie always has to be your best penalty killer. And he looks like it right now.
Other conversation I wanted to get to was just the simple conversation of Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon, one with a goal, one with an assist tonight. Good to see them do it on the big stage in Toronto. But,
yep.
I mean, those guys have been doing it every single night. Those two, I mean, obviously not much else can be said about them. We already know. We've seen these games. We've seen what they're producing. But just amazing stuff coming out of both those guys and just fun to watch and good for them. And I like seeing just – their overall demeanor. They just both seem really happy and having a lot of fun doing it.
Do you know where Mikko Rantanen ranks in goals?
I think he's tied for third right now with Draisaitl.
That's correct. 44 goals, tied with Draisaitl. The only two guys ahead of him?
Connor McDavid, David yes. Pastrnak. Dang, look at me go.
Look at that. Rocking it.
Even with a month off, paternity leave, I'm still sharp. You can't touch this.
In point production, because Nathan MacKinnon, you got to remember, missed 11 games, and I often wonder where he would be had he not missed those 11 games. But in point production, Nathan MacKinnon has 1.49 points per game. He is third in the NHL. So had it not been for him missing the 11 games, he would be third in the NHL in total points. You know who the two guys are ahead of him in points per game?
No.
I mean, take a guess.
Same two? McDavid, close. Pastrnak?
Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. McDavid and Draisaitl, one is at 129 points, obviously Connor, and then Leon Draisaitl's at 100 points. They are the second set of teammates in NHL history, only the second time ever that the first two players in a single season to 100 points are teammates. So McDavid's at 1.9 points per game, Leon Draisaitl 1.52. So not even that much of a big stretch, or not, I mean, that much of a big jump from MacKinnon. MacKinnon 1.49. He has been spectacular. He is the only player. This is a cool stat that I read today. The only player in the NHL playing at a point per game pace at even strength. He's got 56 even strength points in 55 games. He's the only guy. So he's doing it on the power play like he did today. He's doing it on the penalty at even strength. He's scoring goals. He's setting up goals. He's doing it all right now, just in time for the playoffs.
He's got to hit the net a little more, at least tonight in Toronto. Yeah. He had a tough time hitting the net, didn't he?
He had a couple of those ones where he would come in and then kind of turn around and do that no-look backhander, and it would just breeze by the net. There was two that I can remember that he did that.
Yeah, a couple over the crossbar too, in typical Nathan MacKinnon fashion, just trying to go high glove, right?
Yeah. Nathan MacKinnon either scores or shoots highest. I've been saying that for like 8 years. Yeah, it's a little shame he only ended up with two shots. I know that one hurt you a little bit.
Yep, killed my parlay. But hey, we live to fight another day. Still trying to make this 2023 the year I beat Vegas. Not off to a hot start, but I'll get there. Long, lot of year left. Alex Galchenyuk steps up, gets the call in. I feel like this is a guy, you know, kind of a roller coaster season for him, I'm sure. I think we had more expectations when we first heard of the PTO at training camp and, of course, got sent to the Eagles. You know, had to take some time off due to injury, then get sent to the Eagles. And I guess I didn't expect it to be this long till we saw him again. I'm not sure he really made the biggest impact tonight. Got a couple shot on goals himself. But was there anything that stood out to you watching the game live from Alex Galchenyuk?
He had one shot. He took two faceoffs. He had five shifts. 3 minutes, 22 seconds out of 65.
So not good. Not a good look.
Yeah. So this is a guy that clearly is, you know, think back to the early parts of the season. Think back to when the Avalanche had guys playing the 9, 10, 11, and 12 forward role that Jared Bednar couldn't trust and was playing them 3-4 minutes a night. Galchenyuk reaches that mark. Obviously, it's only one game. Maybe he starts to build a little bit of trust because Dennis Malgin used to be in that, you know, in that category, and now he's kind of built his way up to the second line, play 11-28 today against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
More out of desperation than anything, not that he, you know, really earned his way up the lineup.
Well, he also has 6 goals in his last 14 games.
Sure, sure.
He's also providing depth scoring. He's playing the same amount of minutes pretty much every night as someone like Matt Nieto or even Alex Newhook. Alex Newhook played only 8:45 today. Obviously, you got to put your best foot forward and play your best forwards on any given night. Newhook clearly wasn't one today. Matt Nieto was at 8:14, so he was right around there as well. But basically, you know, the Avalanche had that issue in the beginning of the season, but then they added depth in Malgin. They got Lars Eller. They got Matt Nieto. Obviously, Darren Helm is looking like he's inching closer to a return. It looks like with the injuries to Landeskog, to Lehkonen, and to Helm, It looks like once you go past the three, once you go past the two forward injuries, the Avalanche enter that territory of, we can no longer trust this guy. So in the playoffs, if they ever have three forwards deep of injury, and again, this is assuming Landeskog's even healthy, but if they ever have three forwards deep of injury, and that could include, that does include Landeskog, then if they're healthy on defense, I could see a, you know, a scenario where they play 6-7D and 11 forwards. Instead of playing Galchenyuk for 3 minutes, let Jack Johnson and Eric Johnson both dress with the five, you know, horses that on the blue line, and go 7D with the 11 forwards. Because once you hit past two injuries, you've officially run out of forwards. That's what it says to me with Galchenyuk's ice time tonight.
Yeah, no, I agree. And even a couple other ones, right? It's hit or miss, feels like, for Jared Bednar with a lot of his depth guys on who he can trust and who he can't. It doesn't seem like there's much consistency there on any given night when it's a tough game like this, when you gotta play third minutes with guys that you know are gonna go in there and make an impact. Sometimes it feels like Jared Bednar's a little limited on who he can use.
Yeah.
Well, right on. I guess looking ahead at tomorrow in Ottawa, another 5 o'clock game, and then Saturday against Detroit, an 11 o'clock game. So two early games, already a pretty good start for the Avalanche on the road trip. I guess, what do you want to see to ensure that the road trip ends on a good note?
You know, I predicted going into the road trip, you're going to win 3 of 4 with the one loss being in Ottawa because of the back-to-back. I still kind of feel that way. Granted, the Sens have lost 3 games in a row. They've lost a little bit of that luster that they had. They got blown out by the Edmonton Oilers 6-3 in their last showing. But I'm just really curious what Jared does with the goaltending, because there's two ways you can go about this. You can, you know, play the goalie on a back-to-back in Georgiev, who has faced only 57 shots in 3 games, not even 20 per. You can play him on a back-to-back in Ottawa, hope he locks it in, gets a victory, and then rest him from Thursday all the way to Monday, because you have that game in Detroit Saturday where you can just throw your backup at the Red Wings, who are not playing too well right now. Or you don't play him in the back-to-back. You play the backup, potentially lose, put Georgi back against the Red Wings, play him then, send him to Colorado, play him Monday at home as well. So I'm really curious how they go about this. The goaltending thing is unfortunate, not having Frankie, because with a healthy Frankie, the loss to New Jersey probably doesn't happen. There's a couple other games there where you feel a little more confident in your goaltending. And we might see some games here where they miss out on points because they have to play Johansson or Annan or Kincaid. So we'll see what happens. I still think they win 3 of 4 because of the goaltending scenario that's playing out. But if Francouz was healthy and you were giving him one of these games and Georgie the other, they'd probably win all four, and they still can. It's just going to be a little bit more tough with the backup goalie.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, it kind of, there's a balance you kind of have to play here. Kind of the same with the Arturi Lehkonen situation, right? I mean, yes, you still want to keep packing on wins and keep climbing the standings if you can, but at this point, you know, you're in the playoffs. Do you really want to go with more risky plays just to try to pick up 2 points here or there, when you're already kind of on a decent little road trip, winding down the season?
Yeah.
You know? It's a tough line to walk, right? I mean,
which one would you play Georgie in, the back-to-back or Detroit?
I think,
do you value him not playing a back-to-back, or do you value rest from Thursday all the way to Monday?
That's kind of what I'm saying, is I think I value the rest here. You know, throw Kincaid at Ottawa. If you lose, you lose. So what?
Johansson's on the road trip, not Kincaid.
Oh, really? That's the route they went? I guess paternity leave doesn't have me as sharp as I thought.
It's all right. I made this joke last game, and it wasn't even a joke. I was dead serious. I've been so disconnected from the backup goalie carousel that every time I show up to Ball Arena for a home game, because they had those four in a row before the road trip, I don't even remember who was at morning skate. I look at the game sheet when I get it, or I look down at the bench and figure out, is it Annan, Johansson, or Kincaid? I kind of find out in that moment. So it is what it is.
Cool. Well, we'll be back Saturday post game. You'll be in Detroit, so another live, giving us a little clout. Congratulations to you also, by the way, for joining the radio show you joined today on Sportsnet. I know that's a major accolade for you in your career, so shout out Era for that one.
Yeah, and Nick Kiprios and Justin Bourne, thank you. The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. It's 5 days a week, 2-hour radio show in Toronto here. They obviously talk all hockey, but it's very Maple Leaf centric because we are in Toronto. The first, and you know obviously how many podcasts and radio shows I listen to that are hockey related. This is my first time appearing on a show that I am subscribed to and is part of my daily slash weekly cadence of what I listen to. So that was pretty cool. It was a lot of fun.
Did they call you Arif?
They actually had my name right. Nick Kiprios, former NHLer. Look him up. I love Nick Kiprios. He's a G. He won the Stanley Cup in 94 with the Rangers, and he played for the Maple Leafs, among other teams. I turned on their show about 5 minutes. They have a live YouTube feed, and then they're live on the radio. I turned on their live YouTube feed about 5 minutes before I was scheduled to go on. And right before the commercial break, he said, when we come back, we got Arif Dean of Mile High Sports. And I was like, whoa, that was impressive. He said it right, had it right from the first get. I don't know if they did a little bit of digging and found a podcast to hear me say my name, or if they just got it on the go, but it was great.
Did you plug us, more importantly?
I sure did not. Well, no, they plugged us. That's why I didn't, because right when I jumped on, Nick Kiprios said, it's Arif Dean of Mile High Sports. He's a host of the Hockey Mountain High podcast. And then he went right into it. So he did the plugging for me.
Right on. It's
pretty crazy when you jump on a show that big. As the show was going on, I was gaining followers, and I had two people tweet me during the show saying, great insight on Kipper and Bourne. Like, I've never had that before. So it's just
calm down.
It's just really great to see how big, it's just really cool, not great, but cool to see how big these shows are in Canada, and how many people are listening live, not just later like I usually do.
Yeah, especially down the stretch that ramps up around the Colorado Avalanche too, right? So strap in. Here we go. It's go time. 1 month left, like Arif said. So, we'll see you guys on Saturday, live from Detroit and live from my basement. We'll be doing another podcast. So thanks for hanging out with us. If you made it this far on the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone. And we got you. Enjoy. Alexander Georgiev.
That Marner shot, it looks like you poke checked it. Just what did you see him doing? What was kind of your thought process on that play?
Trying to be patient and see what he got, and kind of see if he's short distance to me and give him nothing.
What can you say about the way this team's playing defensively? I think it's 58 total shots over the past three games. Just what's impressed you about that?
Yeah, really, really great defense. We play so much in the defensive zone that definitely helps a lot. And keep going like that, it works for us.
Yeah. Is it tough to stay sharp for games like this where you face seven or eight shots in the last two periods, but you have to make big stops, one on Nylander, the two-on-one on Yaron Krog? Is it?
It's a little different. I want to say harder or anything. You just try to be in the moment, and whatever comes, if you get to play the puck or anticipate the plays, just the same as usual.
What can you say about the heater that Nate's on?
He's a world-class player, and I'm not really following what kind of points streak he has or goals.
Nine.
He's awesome. He's top player in the world. We need that play from him.
What do you think about how your team has really come together, second half of the season, even though you still have a lot of injuries?
Just finding ways to win, playing smart hockey. We've been playing really good lately. Like I said, we spent so much time in offensive zone, and winning the chances battle. So we gotta keep it like that.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.